5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. Some organizations have already announced their 2022 festival schedules. Now in its 18th year, the 10-day Winter Jazz Fest in New York City is go and will feature more than 100 groups at 12 venues, taking place January 13th through the 22nd. Tickets are now on sale. For more information, winterjazzfest.com. The Portland, Oregon-based Biamp PDX Jazz Festival is scheduled February 17th through the 26th. For more information, pdxjazz.org. And the Love Supreme Jazz Festival in Glynde in East Essex in the UK is scheduled for July 1st through the 3rd. For more information, lovesupremefestival.com. From All About Jazz comes the news that Joe Henderson, the complete Joe Henderson Blue Note Studio Sessions, has been reissued by Mosaic Records, focusing on the tenor saxophonist's 1960s recordings on Blue Note. For more information, mosaicrecords.com. Grammy Award-winning vocalist Cecile McLaurin-Salvant's Grow Your Art, a music and business residency at New England Conservatory in Massachusetts, culminates in a live concert tonight, Thursday, December 2nd, and will be broadcast internationally on Friday, December 17th. For more information, necmusic.edu. North Central College in Naperville, Illinois, presents the Tall Grass Artists Holiday Jazz Festival on Friday, December 3rd. Featured artists include vocalist Janice Borla, trumpeter Art Davis, pianist Chris White, and drummer Jack Mouse. For more information, finearts.northcentralcollege.edu. Guitarist Miles Okazaki and drummer Dan Weiss, who've been playing in a duo setting for more than two decades, continue their Music for Drums and Guitar tour in Rochester, New York, tonight, December 2nd, at Bop Shop Records. Dorchester, Massachusetts, on December 4th, at Mandorla Music, inside of Peabody Hall, Parish of All Saints. Portsmouth, New Hampshire, on Sunday, December 5th, at The Press Room. The University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Michigan on Wednesday, December 8th, and New York City on Friday, December 10th at the Jazz Gallery. For more information, milesokazaki.com and danweiss.net. At Birdland in New York City, guitarist and singer-songwriter Allison Yaffine on Sunday, December 5th, and the Ted Firth Trio on Monday, December 6th inside of Birdland Theater, and the John Fedchuk Sextet, Sunday, December 5th, and vocalist Stacy Kent, December 7th through the 11th, both inside of Birdland Jazz Club. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Continuing the celebration of her latest release, My Original Plan, available on Southport Records, vocalist Joni Pilato performs at Venus Cabaret Theater in Chicago, Illinois, on Sunday, December 5th. The show is an acoustic tour de force variety hour of song and dance. For more information, mercurytheaterchicago.com. The season's end performance at the Lace Mill in Kingston, New York is Sunday, December 5th with drummer Jay Rosen, guitarist Patrick Higgins, and bassist Michael Bizio. For more information, Bizio at earthlink.net. And now for new releases. Out tomorrow, Friday, December 3rd, saxophonist Rich Haley's Boom Slang on Pine Eagle. Other releases out, vocalist Melanie Charles' Y'all Don't Really Care About Black Women on Verve, poet Don Paul's Women and Music, Meld No. 2, and his release with drummer Hamid Drake, Compassion, both on Irresistible Revolutionary. Saxophonist Corey Weed's What Is There to Say on Cellar Music Group, and holiday music out now. Vocalist and pianist Nora Jones' I Dream of Christmas on Blue Note. Vocalist Kat Edmondson's Christmas Volume 1 Holiday Swingin' on Spinneret. And the self-released Moore McCall Jazz Society's One Way Holiday. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. Do I hear a puppy?
Yes, I do have. I have 7 puppies right now. Oh yes. So.
Oh my gosh, are you a foster?
My I have one dog that had puppies, so we have them for 2 more weeks. We're enjoying them, but they are a bit noisy.
Oh, that's okay. I don't mind it. Okay. Congratulations. See, I could never be a foster. See, I love cats. I would be what they call a foster fail. So if I took in cats, they would never leave. Well, never.
I have a written contract with my wife about that, about these puppies that are they're leaving after.
Got it. My guests are multi-reed player, composer, and conductor Philippe Côté and pianist Mark Copeland. Their dual releases are titled The Bell Tolls Variations and Fleur Revisited, both on Odd Sound. Thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Glad to be here.
When did you two cross paths, and when was it decided that you two were creatively matched for The Bell Tolls Variations and Fleur Revisited?
So maybe I'll go. I've been a fan of Mark's music for a long time, and back in 2007, I moved to New York for 1 year to study and just to listen to music and meet people, and I decided to take lessons with Mark. So I just found his info and called him up, and he shared with me a lot of great things. So I got to meet him back then. And for sure, I always enjoy his music. So I wanted to do a project with him later on, which happened.
What was the motivation to rework 2016's Le Fleur et Le Roche into what is now titled Le Fleur?
Yeah, I mean, the concept with this project was I was going to take one tune of Mark, which is Bell Tolls, and make a set of variations. And I wanted to do the same with one of my piece. So I took one that was that had a lot of material to work with. So it's a piece that I wrote actually a long time ago. And It's about the contrast between really like a intellectual, like rational thinking of 12 Tone Rose, which is very serious music theory, and trying to do something as beautiful and simple as possible with this. So it's kind of this paradox of working with these two extremes. So I had a lot of material to write variations on that and rewrite the piece in different ways.
Mm. This has not been the only collaborative recording you've produced for 2021. The release Twisting Ways, the music of David Braid and Philippe Côté with pianist Braid and the Winnipeg Jazz Orchestra. Are these projects that have been long awaiting to be recorded, or was there a sudden spark to record?
It's just the timing of the different projects. This project with Mark here, that with string quartet and Mark on piano, has been a long time going for a long time. So I recorded that actually before doing the other project with David Braid. The difference for the project with David Braid and the Winnipeg Jazz Orchestra is that we wrote the piece together. It was kind of a commission of two pieces that blended together and we worked together. Well, for this one with Mark, I kind of took one of his piece and I wrote music around that, and I wrote actually kind of a tapestry for him to improvise on. So it's kind of a different angle.
Mm. Mark, your latest release came out in January. John is its title, celebrating the compositions of a guitarist, John Abercrombie. Your release, Gary, came out in 2018, honoring bassist Gary Peacock. Both of these performers were friends as well as bandmates. Did you take time to process your loss, or did you dig into recording while still missing their presence? And just to be clear, Gary was still alive to hear what you had written and recorded.
Yeah, he was alive, and he not only heard it, but I had a couple questions for him as I was preparing one. In fact, the night after the first session and before the second session, I had a quick question for him. So that was easy, and he got to hear it, which was nice. So that one, there was really no feeling of loss attached to that because Gary was still here, you know. And oddly enough, that session, I mean, I went in the first day and we had almost 90% after 2 hours. You know, I just went in and played, and it went very smoothly. The session with John, you know, was about, I guess, a year after he passed away. And that was probably the most difficult recording session I've ever done, you know, because of all the feelings tied up with it. And unlike the Gary session, the John one was very difficult. You know, I felt like, there were just a lot of emotions going on, and usually I'm able to channel that and play. And this one was very difficult, so much so that for months I didn't think I had anything we could release. And I thought maybe I'd have to go back in the studio. And, you know, I would say, well, let me listen to it. And I'd listen to 3 minutes, and my reaction would be, I just can't listen to this, you know. And at a certain point, you know, it was getting to be months had gone by, and it was time to get this thing ready for release or decide to go back in and re-record it. So I sat myself down, took a few days, and I just listened to all the different takes, and I realized we had something, you know. And then it ended up, in the end, it ended up, I think, a nice project. But I think my grief was such I couldn't even get close to it for a while.
So you two may have been creatively matched for these two releases, the Bell Tolls Variations and Le Fleur, but you came from different spaces and situations in life. Did you hear and experience the spillover of your emotions into your two releases?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that the music was kind of created so that there would be a lot of space for Mark to improvise and be very spontaneous. So I guess it was a matter of just like getting a recording session organized and just being there in the present. And I think we just shared the music, and it was very easy in a way, because it was designed for Mark to just play. And yeah, so for me, I felt that was easy.
So for me, I was just obviously I was very touched that Philippe had decided to do this, and it was for me it was also kind of a growing process, because playing with strings is a little different than anything else I do, and it calls for just approaching the instrument a little differently, not in a premeditated fashion, but just, you know, being aware of what's around you, what you're hearing, and adjusting accordingly. But, you know, the more times we played this thing through, the more comfortable I became with it. So that was, it's always nice when that happens, because then I had the feeling that there was some real growth going on, which I'm always, you know, glad to be a part of.
Now I'd like to just open it up a bit for you to talk about these two releases. They are two separate releases, but one consciousness. How do you describe these two that were done at the same time?
Well, I guess I should answer that, because I'm the one who decided to do two releases. The project is one big project, honestly, and my first intent was actually to make that into one album. It's just as the more I, after having recorded the music and listening to it, I felt it was two little like worlds, a bit different, and like two sets of variations on two different pieces. And one thing that I like to do as a when I produce a record is I'm still attached to the feeling of listening to a little story or something like a record. It's not like a single. I'm just going on Spotify and listening to one piece. It's like I'm inviting you for X amount of minute of music. So I felt that it was really like, okay, Belto's Variations was 130 minutes of music. And then you could stop there and revisit it with something else and had another energy. Belto's has a bit more of a classical music elements. It's a bit more reflective. I don't know. It's got something. It's different. So I like the idea of having these two little separate worlds coexist.
I don't have too much to add because I didn't compose the music, or arrange it in the case of the Beltos. But no, it's still a composition though. But I just, you know, I really liked working with the projects, and learning to hear my way through them. You know, it's definitely a different experience for an improvising pianist.
We can move on to this as we come to the close of this interview. I guess, you know, Philippe, the question is, when will that doctorate be completed?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd love to answer it. Probably. No, I'm doing this and as well as working on making records and writing music, and I have a few commissions going on. So I'm hoping in a year and a half, but it could be 2 years. We'll see how it goes.
We will see.
Yes.
And Mark, what are you in the throes of?
Oh, I'm kind of running around all over the place since the pandemic abated a bit, starting in September and October, and countries started reopening. There's been a lot of concerts, which after 18 months of never playing in front of people has been kind of a welcome relief. So I'm just trying to ride out the wave till the Christmas holidays, you know, and then I'll take a deep breath and reassess.
Yeah, you and me both, brother.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, the last word. Is there anything that I haven't asked you, something that you'd like to tell us about what's going on with you or those puppies?
I mean, sure. I mean, I can say that I'm really happy with these two records. I mean, they're. I kind of started that project thinking about trying to make chamber music that would have improvisation, and that's how it ended up working. And it's great. There's no drums, no bass, but there's a lot of space, and I like the way it sounds. The recording was done in a really nice classical hall in the Charlevoix region of Quebec on a great piano. So I think we worked really hard to get a really good hybrid classical and jazz sound with the recording, and I'm really happy with this. So I think it's a great recording.
Yeah, well, for me, like I say, it's always a little unusual for me to play with strings, and this project in particular, because it's kind of been an ongoing thing that we've been working on for a while. You know, I've really had a chance to grow with it, and you know, just to watch not only my own growth with playing the music, but to see how Philippe has gotten this whole thing developed of composing this kind of music. That's been really a joy for me to see. And, you know, it's just been kind of a special thing.
For more information, philippecote.com and markcopland.com. And now for some music. Drummer Mike Pride's new release is titled I Hate Work on Rare Noise Records. It draws its material exclusively from the American punk rock band MDC's 1982 debut album, Millions of Dead Cops. We heard Corporate Death Burger. Pride was accompanied by pianist Jamie Saft and bassist Bradley Christopher Jones. A preview of the conglomerate known as Scary Goldings. Larry Goldings on organ, Mono Neon on bass, Tamir Barzilay on drums, and the duo known as Scary Pockets, guitarist Ryan Lerman and Wurlitzer player Jack Conti. Along with guest artists, their release, Scary Goldings 4, comes out on December 31st. Lurch was what we listened to. And from composer and saxophonist Josh Sinton, the piece B24, that's a small b, the number 2, and the Roman numeral 4, from his self-released release, B, and that's a small case B. It becomes available on December 10th. Sinton will be celebrating his debut solo baritone saxophone album with a new release concert on Tuesday, December 7th, at Downtown Music Gallery in New York City. For more information on this free event, downtownmusicgallery.com. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. Interview is with German drummer and composer Marijke Wiening. Her new release with her quintet is Future Memories on Greenleaf Music. So thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So what brought you to work with Greenleaf Music and its owner, trumpeter and composer Dave Douglas, on Future Memories?
So we worked together before on my debut album, Metropolis Paradise. And I knew Greenleaf through a lot of artists that I really admired and listened to. So it was always a big dream of mine to release my debut on Greenleaf. But I didn't know Dave Douglas at all before. So I just sent him my music. And because also a friend of mine told me that he listens to all the music he gets. And then I thought, okay, I'm just going to send it to him. And I was really, really happy when he got back to me to say that he really liked my music and that he wants to meet me. So I went up to his place in upstate New York to meet him and to talk about my future plans and everything. And so was really happy that he said yes to release my debut album Metropolis Paradise, and then it was so great to work together, so he offered me to release Future Memories as well.
Was he present just in a supportive role, or did he become involved in the creative process of the release?
He wasn't present at recording the music or at the music in general, but he was very present in, you know, getting feedback about the layout and the whole artwork and about release dates, and it's great to work with Greenleaf because he has a great team behind him, and they always take care of you really well. So it's a lot of, you know, a lot of talking, a lot of exchanging ideas, and so this makes it really, really nice to work with the label.
Yeah. Let's talk about your longtime quintet, Rich Perry on tenor saxophone, Glenn Zaleski on piano, Alex Goodman on guitar, and Johannes Felcher on double bass.
Yeah.
And how do you keep a group together for that long? How have you done it?
So I found that, or this band has been together since 2018, more or less, 2017, 18, something like that. And it took me a while to get this group together, but I basically tried out different people, except Rich, actually, and Alex. They were in the band from the very beginning, but you know, being a band member, it's really difficult because you think, okay, you want to have these musicians, but then maybe it doesn't work in a group setting. So, being in New York, I mean, you have the best people around you. So I took my time to try out different musicians. And this was just the perfect fit, all of them together, Rich, Alex, Glenn, and Johannes. And and then we played a couple of shows here and there in the village a lot to try out the music. And it was also really new for me to compose or be a composer and a band leader. So it was just a learning experience. And when Metropolis Paradise came out, we went on tour quite a lot in the US and Canada and in Europe as well.
And you've been composing for your groups since you started working with other people, is that correct?
Not quite. I was really the typical drummer side woman for a couple years. Yeah, and I first started to really compose during my master's degree at NYU, where I studied with Stefan Harris, and he really brought me into composing. And he basically said, okay, you have to form your band and you have to compose a whole program for your graduation project. You have 2 semesters, go. And yeah, it was, I mean, without him, maybe I wouldn't have done it, honestly. He was a great teacher.
A great motivator.
Yeah, totally.
In the press release to your new recording, you say that the group's playing has become more organic, and that over time, as you've composed for it, and I'm quoting here, interconnections and expressive opportunities for the musicians have opened up. Was there a creative corner that the group rounded for Metropolis to Future Memories?
Yeah, for Metropolis, it was really, yeah, as I just said, like a learning experience. It was my first album. I didn't really know what I'm doing. I was, everything that I did was the first time for me. And so after going on tour with this group and playing a lot and working on the music together as a band, it really developed his own band sound in a way that you're hearing on Future Memories. So with Metropolis Paradise, it felt like more that I'm the band leader and I'm hiring my musicians, but on Future Memories, for me, it's more like this band that worked together for a couple of years and developed something together.
Yeah. Now we talk about all the travel that you do between the United States and Germany. You obviously cannot travel with a whole drum set. So what are the most important pieces of your gear that you travel with?
Usually I travel with cymbals and my sticks. So sticks are also very important. But actually I have 2 sets of cymbals in both countries. So in New York, I have a set of cymbals, and in Germany, because it gets very heavy traveling.
Yeah. Them.
But within Europe, for example, or within the US, I travel with cymbals and sticks.
Do you buy a plane seat for your cymbals?
No. No, oh man, this would be even more horrible. It's already stressful, but it's pretty good because I have a backpack. It looks like a backpack, my symbol bag. It has like these two stripes that make it look like a backpack. And so usually the stewardess, they think it's a backpack, so they don't say anything. They don't see it's an instrument, which is really good because otherwise I would get in trouble a lot.
Then we won't tell anyone what we've just talked about.
Exactly.
So, in you making music in New York and in Germany, I recently read that New York City's Winter Jazz Fest is scheduled for next year. And you've played in it. You were there in 2019. Are you going to be here next year for it?
No, unfortunately not. I have a couple concerts coming up in Germany. And then I'm gonna be back in New York in February.
And you've got some gigs lined up.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's talk about social media. You maintain a website, but you're also active on Instagram and Twitter.
Twitter and Facebook,
Okay.
YouTube, yeah.
And YouTube. Okay. What is the question, the most asked question of you?
Why do you play the drums and how did you learn about the drums, or how did you start playing the drums?
And how do you answer that?
I'm coming from the piano. I used to play the piano when I was 5 years old, and then I started playing flute when I was 10. And then, and then I had a new piano teacher who was actually a jazz piano player, although I always studied classical music with him. And he made me come to his shows, which I hated because I didn't like jazz at all when I was like 15. But the drums were actually the only instrument that kind of kept my attention. And he always played with really good drummers. And then at the same time, it was a coincidence, I was at a French exchange, student exchange in France. And my French exchange partner, he had a drum set at his house. So after school, we would always, play drums, and he would show me some grooves. And I was like, oh man, this is so fun. So when I came back to Germany, I was like, okay, I'm gonna stop all the other instruments. I want to play drums. And that's how I started playing drums. Yeah.
And your parents were okay with all that noise in the house.
Yeah, thankfully I was growing up in a house, so it was okay. And actually, our neighbors, they were pretty much used to musical instruments and to musical noise anyway. So they thought, okay, it's just another instrument.
I'm still floored that people today are still asking artists like yourself, well, you're a woman and you play drums. Why do you play drums and you're a woman?
Yeah, it's still something that we have to deal with, I guess, and it's gonna take a couple years, I feel like, until it's gonna change. I mean, it's already changing. I feel like in New York there are many female musicians, so it's not as weird. But in Germany there is not a lot. And so it's still something that people didn't see before a lot of the times. And obviously they wonder why you do it.
And you're the one to lead the way.
I mean, I'm thankfully not the only one, but there are a couple of ones in Germany as well, and it gets better, I have to say. But yeah, I feel like it's gonna take a couple of years until it's more common. Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm also teaching, so I'm always encouraging, people who are wondering if it's really possible as a woman to play drums. So I'm always encouraging them. And I have a couple girls that I'm teaching on the drums. And I always try to spread out the word and make advertisement also for girls, because I know a lot of women actually, when they get older and they come after a show, they come to me and say, ah, this is so cool. I always wanted to play the drums, but my parents didn't allow, or it was not used to that I, as a female, that I would play the drums. So I think that actually a lot of women want to play the drums, but for some reason they are too shy, or
peer pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Or parents, I don't know, they don't understand that. I think it's all about education a lot of the time.
Yes. All right. This is where I give my guest the last word. So I'd like to ask you, is there anything you'd like to let us know? Something I didn't ask you, please.
Well, we talked about so much already. I'm always happy to hear from people, you know, all over the world. And yeah, you can always contact me through my website or through social media.
For more information, MarijkeWiening.com. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. Feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.